You paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
The killer spaceman. Nice job, Mr. Heidemann. 11:37 on this Friday evening here in Chicago. John Hansen and until 1 in the morning on WGN Radio. We're going to get to What's Up with Space in just 1 second. Mike is standing by patiently. But we've been talking about atonement for things that you did and you regret forever. And we got a really good one on the text line. This year is 1996. My mom buys her first car. It was a used but very nice and cool 87 Cutlass Supreme. I should say, this is not me. This is from a texter from the 630. So his mom gets a new car. This person had just gotten their license. And on Christmas Eve, she sends me to White Hen to get butter and milk. Oh, the old White Hen runs. I know that. So this person said that they decided to do donuts in the snow and they hit a dumpster with their mom's new car. This person lied, told her that a blue van hit it in the parking lot and took off. So this guy lied. This kid, he's 16, lies about his hitting a dumpster instead. He lies, says it's a van. So he thought he's in the clear. Then 2 weeks later, after she gets the car back from the body shop, we pull into that White Hen, and there's a blue plumber's van there. And she asks, hey, was that the guy you hit or hit you? And he said, yes. That's the one who hit me. Well, she walked into the store and tore this poor man a new one, calling him every name in the book. I felt so bad for the guy. So to the plumber dude, I'm sorry, man. I was just trying to save my butt. Wow, that's an admission. So, yeah. I don't know why you had to lie, though. Just be like, no, it wasn't that guy. It was a different van, because then the plumber obviously got in a lot of trouble. All right, that'll do it for atonement here. 312-981-7200. If you'd like to join the conversation now about space, well, we have been welcoming all of you into the program with walk-up music, so we must do the same for our good friends. So here we go. From San Francisco, California, senior editor at space.com, please welcome to the program, Mike Wall. All right, Mike, what'd you think about that introduction?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. You guys just keep on topping yourselves. It's I didn't think anything was going to beat last week when you guys just kind of improvised that little the space theme song or whatever, but yeah,
well,
pretty impressive.
Well, here's the secret is that Michael actually deleted the song, so it worked out perfectly that we were doing walk-up music. Don't worry, we'll have a new intro for you for next time. So, Mike, how's space doing? What's going on up there?
Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot of stuff up there. There's a lot of stars, a lot of galaxies, a lot of lots of planets.
Yeah.
Same. Nothing's falling out of the sky, really.
Well, that's good. That's certainly good news. Hey, you know, this story that you wrote 14 hours ago, by the way, you've written like 9 stories in the last 3 days as I go through your bylines. You're really on a roll. The biodiversity that might exist on alien planets, you and I have talked about in this program, the likelihood of that there's some form of life. In fact, it seemed incredibly unlikely that there wouldn't be. But this idea that that while we have this very diverse planet and biodiversity here on Earth, that there's some suggestions out there that wherever there is other life on other planets, that they might even have richer biodiversity. Walk us through this.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's basically this like climate modeling study that you know, also looked at the kind of ocean circulation currents and just took a bunch of like hypothetical alien planets and just modeled them, you know, with different types of continent kind of layouts and different kinds of atmospheres, different kinds of ocean currents. And what they concluded was that if there was a planet with a pretty thick atmosphere and had like a significantly slower like spin rate than Earth does, and it would have stronger ocean circulation patterns, and that's important because ocean circulation is really key to life in Earth's oceans, because it takes nutrients from the depths of the sea and brings them up to the surface where the photosynthetic life is. So it's like really important for like the diversity of our ocean life. And and it turns out that Earth doesn't really have all that strong of these circulation patterns. Like, we don't have, like, a lot of this ocean upwelling, like, at least compared to what they did with their computer models with these hypothetical planets. So So the implication is, I mean, we have this crazy biodiverse planet. I mean, millions and millions of species, maybe even billions. Nobody really knows. But we may not be on the high end of the biodiversity scale for all alien planets out there. You know, I mean, there like could be some that just dwarf our diversity, which is really weird to think about.
Clearly, we don't. This is all hypothetical, of course. But I guess the argument you could make is that, look, if you're running computer models for like different scenarios for planets, when you start to consider just how many planets are out there, it seems likely that, yeah, one or two or more of these things would fall into those conditions just by the sheer number of, you know, planets out there meeting the number of possibilities in order to create life, right?
Yeah, and there are just billions and billions and billions of these things out there, and so some of them are going to be weird in very interesting ways, and it's also just, I mean, there's like a metaphysical aspect to this, or like a philosophical aspect to this, and it's like we shouldn't assume that we're super special, and that's kind of hard to get our heads around because mm-hmm. you know we like to think we're special. And all of human intellectual history, basically, over the past few thousand years has been about us confronting the fact that maybe we're not that special, you know? I mean, we've got, then Galileo comes along and says, actually, like, the sun doesn't go around. The sun doesn't go around the Earth. You know, we're not the center of the universe. And then a couple hundred years later, you've got Darwin saying, well, actually, you know, we're not, like, specially created. We're just part of, like, a line of species. And so, yeah, I mean, we are gradually coming to grips with the fact that we as a species are not super special, and maybe it's time to consider that we as a planet are not all that special either, and that there's, like, no reason to actually think that we are the most diverse and the most, like, the kind of smiled-upon planet in the entire galaxy. It's just kind of, like... Yeah, it's kind of strange to actually assume that, right?
I feel like it's a slow burn that we've slowly been realizing, as you said, that we weren't so special. It's been like a real slow one, but eventually we're going to get there and figure out that life exists other places and it's just as cool, perhaps, as ours. And I wonder for you, I mean, you have a PhD in evolutionary biology. Would it be like, I know that the odds of it happening in our lifetime, unfortunately, we've even talked about that, is not probably likely, but how cool would it be to like stumble upon this another diverse, biodiverse planet like ours and to kind of like test our theories of evolution or at least see how they would translate in completely different places? Would that interest you as a scientist?
Yeah, that would be so amazing because, you could see how actually evolution plays out in a different planet that had different starting materials, that has like a whole different environment. Yeah, I mean, it's really, that would be unbelievable to see. And it would also be really interesting just to see what these alien creatures are sort of made of, what their biochemical structure is, you know, what are the chemical reactions they use to make energy and all the rest of it, you know, and what are their sort of genetic molecules? And I mean, if like they have DNA too, and if they're like us in that way, then that's just like really fascinating because that means that life probably had a common origin and has spread like all the way around our galaxy. Because like the chances that you independently stumble onto the same super complex like genetic molecule just by luck, that's just like super, super tiny chance. So it would mean that like life has actually spread around kind of far and wide across the galaxy.
Oh, that kind of blew my mind, gave me goosebumps there. All right, coming a little bit closer back to Earth, but not all the way, talking about the moon, Japan getting in the game to help trying to help humanity settle on the moon, and they have a timeline for what they're going to be doing. Walk us through, because it's a lot sooner than I think I realized that another country was aiming to get there.
Yeah, it's part of this sort of private rush to the moon. I mean, private companies, there's a bunch of them that are interested in sort of, taking scientific payloads down to the moon. I mean, some of it is like they like want to get paid by NASA to do this and, you know, take NASA scientific gear down to the moon. There are a few companies that have already scored contracts to actually do that. But there are some other companies, and there's this one you're talking about, Japanese company iSpace, that they sort of want this just because they think it's a good business deal too, and they want it on the action. They're planning to launch their first surface mission to the moon, put down like a lander on the moon in 2021, and then in 2023 they'll do their first mission where they actually land something and put a rover down. You know, they'll like have a lander and they'll like roll a rover off that lander and start to explore the moon's surface. And I mean, like the idea most of these companies have is, I mean, there's a lot of, like, there's lots of water ice on the moon. I mean, especially if you go to the poles and at the bottom of the craters, like lots of craters near the poles, it's been like, sunlight has not hit these crater floors for billions of years, probably. They're in permanent shadow and they're just like cold traps, basically. So like over like the last 4.5 billion years, this like water ice has built up in these things. And so the idea is if we can mine that water ice, we can access it, and we can like use it obviously to keep astronauts alive on the moon, to help start settlements, but we can also turn it into rocket fuel. Mm-hmm. And we can we can like make these off Earth fuel depots, you know, like put gas stations up basically like around the moon. And yeah, we can spur exploration through that sort of thing. So that's what all these companies are kind of trying to do. They want to go do prospecting work with the resources, with the water ice, and be one of the first ones to start extracting it and selling it to people.
Fascinating stuff. We're going to take a quick commercial break. More with Mike after that. I want to ask you about the story about, the Earth going to the moon. Nope, the United States going to the moon maybe by 2024 again. But then also this idea of nuclear propulsion being a game changer for space exploration. That'll be coming up next on WGN.
Now it's time for Mike Wall from Space.com with What's Up with Space?
Did you just do that while we were talking, Mike Heidemann? You just that's take number two?
Yes, I did.
Which one do we like better, Michael or Mike Wall? Do we like this one better?
Yeah, that one was pretty cool. I like all the little beepy boopy stuff going on. That's pretty cool.
Because nothing says stereotypical space segment like beeps and boops to really get us back. Talking with Mike Wall from space.com, great website. And Mike, we just kind of met through another producer a couple months ago. And it's one of the sites that I've bookmarked. I follow guys on Twitter, on Instagram as well. You guys just do some great work over there.
Cool. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Oh, good. All right, good. I thought you were going to go on a long expanse about it. But, yeah, you kept it nice and short there. I like that. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, it's good. Cool. Go, everyone. Space.com. All right. Nuclear propulsion, a game changer potentially. Is this harnessing the power of nuclear energy like we've done here on planet Earth, but using it to move things faster through space?
Yeah. And this is something NASA's really interested in because with their sort of ultimate goal in like the human spaceflight arena anyway is to go to Mars and put boots on Mars, and they're trying to do that by the end of the 2030s. But one of the big hurdles is just how long it takes to actually get there. It'll take like a minimum of about 6 months, and that's just like one way. And then you've got to worry about how much time you're actually going to spend on the surface, and then you got to get back here. And so, that's going to impose some serious risks for the astronauts going. You know, there's a lot of radiation in deep space. Once you get away from our planet's kind of like protective magnetic bubble, and of course, if you're away from Earth's gravity for a long time, you got to worry about like your muscles wasting and your bone density decreasing, and all this stuff. You know, so like one of NASA's real goals, if they can pull it off, is to try to reduce the trip time, and one of the best ways to sort of do that in the short term might be with this thing called like nuclear thermal propulsion, which is basically like you put on your spacecraft, you've got like a small nuclear reactor, basically like a little fission reactor, and you take the heat that it generates. I mean, if you split an atom and you get a lot of energy, obviously, you know, you get bombs that way too. But you harness that heat and use it to just blast like some kind of propellant out the back of your spacecraft. You can get going really, really, really fast. So yeah, NASA's been talking about that like recently. I mean, NASA's administrator just mentioned that just like the other day, saying, you know, this is great promise for us and we should really investigate it and like throw some serious money at it, which Congress has already done. Congress allocated about $100 million for the development of this technology just this year. So,
well, I imagine it's like anything else. It's about how much is the payload, how confident are we that it works? Because really, once you get up to a certain speed, right? I mean, like space isn't going to slow you down. So it's not like you have to have a reaction going around all the time. You just got to do something to get up to the speed you need, right?
Yeah, there is zero friction up there. So once you get going fast, yeah, there's nothing that's going to slow you down, unless you hit like an asteroid or something, which would be bad.
That'll slow you down. Yeah, that's going to be more than just a minor inconvenience. I feel like, oh man, we slowed yeah. down a little bit due to that asteroid we just face planted into. Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, it's a little scary to think about putting people on board a spacecraft with a fission reactor. But, you know, I mean, it's not going to be like a Chernobyl-type giant monster thing. It'll be like a very scaled-down, small version of it. But it's just something that they're talking about. You know, it's not – I mean, maybe it'll be ready in 10, 15 years when we're really starting to think seriously about going to Mars if things progress like the way that we hope they do and if the whole moon stuff that we want to do is going well. But that's a whole other story that we can talk about too.
Yeah. And I imagine it's like anything else. When we were deciding to go to the moon, it's a lot of different things happening at once, deciding how you're going to get there, building the machines. It takes some time. So it's good to kind of like lay the groundwork now for travel that's coming up in 10, 15, 20 years. All right, Mike, well, we are out of time here tonight. Thank you so much for always popping on in and joining us. It's always nice to talk to someone in the Pacific time zone, because at least it's 2 hours earlier where you are.
No worries. Always fun to talk to you guys.
All right. Absolutely. That is What's Up with Space. Mike Wall from space.com. We'll talk more in the future. Quick commercial break, then the news on 720 WGN.